I was asked recently what school of poetry I belong to, and I said snark. The book is Sorry You Are Not an Instant Winner. My youngest daughter recently pointed out to me that when she was eight, we were in Barnes & Noble, and she had some M&Ms, and she got to the end of them, and we looked, and we had lost the contest, and inside it said, Sorry You Are Not an Instant Winner. And I said, that would really be a great book title, which was funny because at that point I wasn't writing. And it showed up as a book later, and she remembered this. A lot of my poems are about family, so I'll start with an ode to my mother called Good Housekeeping. My mother grew thorny, exotic plants that stabbed you and didn't make flowers. Our backyard, a Roman legion of spears and pikes ready to butterfly your calves and shins and ankles. Indoors, our walls grimaced with masks from peoples who apparently spent their time having teeth extracted and getting ready to sneeze. She liked colors with the personalities of collection agents, a rust orange shag wall to wall that punched your eyes like scabby knuckles, a sofa striped white and acid green as if they'd just let it out of jail. Like every other woman on our block, she saved those sticky stamps and traded them for Fiesta ware, but then threw the plates at my father so many times that the white triangles where the glaze chipped off made them leer like jack-o'-lanterns. Once she bought a crimson lacquered table at a yard sale and sawed its legs off short, so it stood like a veteran on stumps. I watched her go after it with a hacksaw, her face concentrated like a child with a book of matches, the dust flying off wood-colored but also flecked with lurid red. Because of when this book was written, I was busy stage managing my father's death, and a lot of the poems are about that. This is Carla. She wore a maroon floor-length wraparound skirt that looked like it was made of tent material and a mustard-colored t-shirt every time we saw her, and her head was shaved. My father's hospice nurse, sent by the county twice a week to drop free bags of diapers in our foyer and approach his cage of a bed like a zookeeper, full of false enthusiasm and paltry treats. After she glanced at him, she always said, "He's doing great," meaning, I suppose, he was dying at the correct rate to allow Montgomery Hospice to turn a profit. It was funny because Carla, and I think her name was Carla, usually looked worse than he did. With her hedgehog bristles of black hair, her skirt cinched so tight, the front and back of it almost met around her emaciated waist. We decided Carla was a Krishna who didn't like the food. Her answer to our every query was the same, whether we asked for something to dress the boils or a visit from the podiatrist, all she said was, "Oh, that's not really necessary, is it?" As if his death already had happened, and she was humoring us in our delusion that there were still some things we needed to do. And now I'm actually stage managing round two with my mother, and I decided to brag about how good I was at it. There are 1,000 details between here and death, and I am a born administrator, a bureaucratic Zeno marching along, squashing midpoints under my soles. I am an expert renter of hospital beds and commodes, a quartermaster's dream of oxygen tanks and adult diapers. I am the best boss the night nurses ever had. And I do just kind of write about every single thing that happens to me. If you ever piss me off, you'll be a poem. So my youngest daughter, Katie, went to college, and I had to write about it. Katie again. Everything lasts longer. Toilet paper, soap, my patience. We cook every other day now and do laundry every third. At 2:55, the school bus wheezes and settles like a fat woman into a chair, and I don't listen for the dumpity bang of the screen door or the whump of your backpack hitting the floor. You singing harmony to a song trickled into your ears by headphones and inaudible to me, as my "How was your day?" was inaudible to you, until I waved in your face, caught your attention like a minnow, briefly, in my hands, long enough to tell you what the snack was and who was using the car. Then you shut your door tight like the lid of a submarine and floated away from us. We're back to Mom. This is called hot. When I spit out its tip, the jalapeno was a red arrow on my white plate, and I thought I really was going to die. The burn spreading and coating my mouth and throat until my tainted saliva was a homegrown Texas Pete's. My mother wasn't even pissed. She just thought daring an 8-year-old to bite a hot pepper was hilarious. She bent her wrists and copied how I flapped and scrunched my eyes and gaped my red-hot mouth like a blind baby bird. Finally, I got away and lay my tongue down on a soft white bed of sunbeam bread. But all that night, I still couldn't sleep, and the streetlight just outside my window sizzled like a grill. Now, we were recently in the hospital, and one of the things that hospitals are great for is people watching. So this is hospital poem number 2, and there were a bunch of others, but this one survived. I don't speak Spanish, but I can tell by the way their glances slip back and forth like mops on tile that they are complaining, that some invisible third maintenance worker isn't pulling his weight, that they are conspiring to make sure his lazy ass gets fired. There's just something universal in the way their bodies angle towards each other next to the wheeled cart in a tight V, like the wedge that they will drive between themselves and this unseen colleague. Girls on playgrounds everywhere in the world stand like Egyptians, jutting their chins over one shoulder so they can fix one eye on the girl they've just driven to the edges of the blacktop and keep one eye on the center of the circle of their temporary allies, making sure it hasn't moved, making sure they're still in it. Now, many people know that approximately 25 years ago, I inflicted Catholicism on myself. And so I write about why I did this thing quite frequently. And this is one of the poems called Where. Where do they keep the unanswered prayers? In a stockroom somewhere? Forklifts treading between the aisles? Pallets of anguished beseechments labeled alphabetically betrayal, cancer, death? Or buried underground like nuclear waste, ready to blow or leak into the water table if something shifts? Or do they spew them out of pipes in West Virginia into streams until the cows that drink from them keel over, their eyes titanium blue, as if something celestial poured into them and hardened? That is a real story, and you should look it up. DuPont is still litigating that. They dumped stuff in West Virginia, and all these people's cows died, and their eyes turned blue, and DuPont said, nah, we didn't do anything, and now the people are dying. This is a brand new poem. It's 2 days old, and it has decided to give me the title for the next book I'm going to write, and it's called Cheap Eats. It's probably relevant, although I don't like to usually make this part of a reading, to understand that I have rheumatoid arthritis, which is part of the subject of this. The pain unbears me, not because it is excruciating, but because it isn't, needling me like a middle child, testing my ability to ignore. Like the rabbit punches my mother delivered throughout one Christmas Chinese dinner, punctuating every disparagement with right door, right? Then a quick knuckle under my scapula that nobody else could see. A little knot forming in my back, slippery and dark like the balls of General Tso's chicken on the table that kept slithering out of my chopsticks every time I tried to eat, making dinner into a comedy in which Sisyphus played the lead. Or that fox who never could reach the grapes dangled above his head, purple as bruises. How am I doing for time? I haven't used up my 15 minutes, have I? Okay. That year. In 1974, I learned that airplanes could fall out of the sky, presidents could quit their jobs, and parents could love people who were not each other. Like an Eskimo's lexicon for snow, I had 100 words for a stomach sick with tension and diagrammed in crayon the paths of all the various flying projectiles. The grapefruit yellow mug that exploded at my father's feet when my mother chucked it from the top step as he opened the front door. The Gerbera daisies whose necks she wrung, grinding their severed red and purple heads into the tiles of the kitchen floor. and the cigars she slit open like wounds, bleeding their tobacco in a crazed map from his office to the sunroom, up the stairs, until it led him to her, lying in their bed with a bottle of gin and a carving knife. And she said she couldn't decide whether to kill herself or him or both. As he calmly removed his cufflinks and placed them neatly on the dresser, he answered, "Let me know when you finally make up your mind." This is another religion one because they're a lot of fun. It's called Not Emily. Because I could not stop for death, death swerved, punching me hard in the arm with his right side mirror, knocking me to the sparkling hot pavement. When I got up limping, I could just see death flipping me off as he zoomed away, his bony finger bisecting the rear view like the spire of a church against a shiny tin pan sky. So we're moving into the home stretch, and I really think sometimes that these last two poems are the only ones I should have ever written because they kind of say my whole worldview. And this is called My Name. I try not to hate you for mangling my name, for saying Dora or Dorothy or Doris, because you've heard of those, and what can exist in the world that you haven't heard of? I try not to hate you for ignoring the way I say it, as if you're overlooking some social faux pas, my left hand extended or spinach caught between my teeth. After 50 years, I'm almost used to the way you're going to reverse the order. Is Carol there? As if my father was a fool who never could adapt to this country's better ways. As if there's only one way a name can be, which is just like yours. And we're closing the way we started with a poem about my mother. Things my mother taught me. To start a car, apply red lipstick first. When you drive by the country club in summer, roll down the windows and yell, "Napalm the bigots," at the golfers. If mommy takes you to the Vietnam protests in your stroller, tell daddy we went shopping all day. At 5 o'clock when the gin comes out, little girls need to stop talking. When gray-haired women dye their hair red, the color that they get is menopause red. If some old lady takes too long backing out of her parking spot, she's powdering her pussy. If someone notices the scar where your mother burned you with a cigarette, call it a flower power tattoo. When you're 8 and the kids from the Catholic school charge across the street to chalk dirty Jew on your house, run. When you get to a safe distance, spit. When the teacher makes you play Mary in the Christmas pageant because she says you're so nice and dark, do it. When your father says, "How was school today?" lie. In 1945, when you're 13 and your parents pay for plastic surgery because you look too Jewish to make a decent marriage, bleed and bleed and bleed. And then when it heals up, and people stop you on the street to ask if you're the movie star Jennifer Jones, say, "Fuck yeah, that's who I am." Thanks for listening.
Thank you so much, Dorit. Wow. You know, there's nothing like a new, cool, wonderful voice to listen to. Thanks again. That was wonderful. Just wonderful.